Hi there. So, I was thinking, as we're doing the readings and stuff, I turned off my cell phone, and then I realized I don't have a watch, and I wanted to make sure I stuck to a half an hour. So I asked one of my friends up here, could I borrow his watch, and he said yes. One addict giving away his watch to another addict. So it shows we're all in recovery, right? So clean time doesn't equal recovery. So if you had given me this topic a few years back, I would have been all like fired up and judgmental. I would have been like, yeah, that person is this and that person is that. But now that I'm in my 30s, I'm just tired and judgmental, so I'm going to be a lot calmer about it. This is the thing. The old timers always say, you know, they told me sit down and shut up and put, you know, cotton out of ears in your mouth, all that stuff. And it's like, you know, so many of us, especially me, have issues with authority, surprise, surprise, when we first get here. So I don't know if someone had said sit down and shut up, et cetera, if there's any kids in the room. Maybe I wouldn't have stayed. Yeah, it's like someone says, now you say that because you didn't know me back then. But, so this is how I feel, though. Sometimes I feel like, okay, you know, maybe that's a little harsh, but sometimes I feel like we softened up a little too much around here.
Yeah.
And, it really is. And one of the, you know, one of the reasons I come around, I could probably stay clean for a while without coming to meetings. I've been clean for a while. I could probably coast for a long time. But the reason I keep coming back is because I was told to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, and so that's what I do. You know, that sometimes that's the service work that I do in a day, is just to come to a meeting. But, you know, it's hard to keep coming when you have people who, you know, you're trying to help them out, and they're just like, fuck your recovery, you know. We'll pick it up later. So social media, as we were reading at the beginning of the meeting, there, I cannot tell you how many times I have gently tried to say something to someone, and they've gone on social media and been like, this terrible person just brutalized me today. Oh, it's so awful. And then everyone comes like, it's okay, baby, don't let people chase you out of the room. It's like, you're so wonderful, and here's some emojis with kisses. And it's like, all I told them to do is to be grateful for the job they haven't been fired from because they keep not showing up. It's like, I'm sorry I'm so mean, you know? God, like, and, I had this incident a little while back where this one gal I know, she's been clean for a little bit, you know, but she made a mistake. And the mistake is fine. Everyone makes mistakes. But she didn't admit it. Stuff went wrong. She didn't own up to it. And, you know, and I called her on the phone and I was like, hey, you know, what happened here? And she starts out saying, oh, well, I didn't understand at first. And I said, well, if you didn't understand, call me. You know, it's cool. You can always ask. And then she was like, oh, well, it wasn't that I didn't understand. It's that I didn't know. And I was like, okay, well, if you didn't know, yeah. And then she winds up retracting her story altogether. She doesn't even know what I'm talking about now. And I was like, this is probably how police feel. You know what I mean? Like, I finally got it. And I actually know a guy who was a cop in D.C., and his substation up on Rhode Island Avenue, this guy runs in, someone cut him, he had blood on his shirt, and they were like, he goes, you know, this guy took my wallet, and so he and another cop run out, and a few blocks away, they find this guy with a few drops of blood on his shirt, right, and I was like, that's probably him, you know, they said white shirt, jeans and stuff, so they get him, they handcuff him, and he's like, I didn't do anything, you know, that wasn't me. And so my buddy, you know, sees this knife in this guy's belt, like big knife with blood on it. And so he pulls the knife out and he goes, what's this? And the guy's like, it's not mine. So yeah, so that is just how we can be in recovery. It's like, no, it's not mine, you know? And when my sponsor, there was this one time, and I don't know if he's in the room, he's probably at the convention though, someone that I've learned a lot from, someone who does a lot of service, and we butted heads about something, and a lot of people who know me, just like my whole fan club up here, thank you. A lot of people who know me have heard me tell this story before, so fortunately I don't know a lot of you guys. And so he did something which was totally fine, and I just didn't like it, basically. Really long story short, and I can admit that now, you know. And so I was telling everybody who would listen about he did this, and, you know, and I was getting my story out front so that everyone would, you know the real truth about what happened, and that I had been, very insulted. But that I was right, basically. I need everyone to know that. And so my sponsor, I was sitting at her kitchen table, and she was like, "So what's this that I've heard about you and so-and-so?" And I go into the story, right? And that's one of the things she always used to say to me. I would say this whole narrative, and she'd be like, "Okay, well, that's the story. Now what's the truth?" Yeah, that's a good one. But that particular time, she said to me, she was like, "Wow, Vera," she was like, "You just get on your high horse and you ride through town, don't you?" Yeah, I was like, Oh God, and it hurt so bad, but you know what, I knew it was true, and I just feel like, I feel like I can't even do that in recovery now, like people don't listen, and that's a shame. The way that I got better was by doing things that I didn't really want to do, but at that point I was so desperate, the first time that I was ever at an NA meeting, I was in an inpatient detox. I was 19, and I just figured, heroin's the problem. I mean, I held it together when it was just all the other stuff, so if I could just stop doing that, or maybe only do it occasionally, then everything was going to be better, And I used again after that, and after that. Actually, the last inpatient I went to was in Salisbury, and I always forget that it's on the way here. So I was like, man, just stop by Hudson Health. It's like, who's ever been there? I always think it's funny when newcomers come to meetings, they're like, "I'm in such and such treatment center. I don't know if you know about it." And it's like, yeah, we do. And we could tell when you came in with eight other people that you were probably in treatment, So. But I went to the treatment center around here, and at that point, things had gotten bad enough that I really wanted to stay clean. I was really hoping that I would, because it was just so bad, but I didn't. I didn't. But, fortunately, after just a couple months out there again, it was winter, right? This guy who I was like kind of saying we had some kind of deal or whatever, but it fell through because I went away for a couple days and then showed up again at his apartment. He was like, "I don't know what you think you're doing here," and I was like, "Give me $20 and I'll leave." This was in Baltimore, and he was like, "No," and I was like, "Yeah," and he was like, "No." So he was like, "You can stay here tonight, but in the morning you've got to go." And so I was like, "Well, I'll wait till he falls asleep, and I'll see what kind of money is lying around." And so he was smart enough to hide his money, but I guess he didn't think I was crazy enough to take his car keys, which I did. And also a pair of shoes and this plate I really liked and a blanket. Tiptoeing down the stairs, like making a couple trips. I still have the plate, by the way. It's a really cool plate. But I'm not sure I'll survive. It's one of those 60s stoneware type things. So I took the car. I drove up to New York, and it turns out there was $60 and a full pack of Marlboros in the car. And it's like he probably wished that he'd just given me the $20 at that point. So I went from having a court date coming up when I went to inpatient, that's why I went, to like prove that I was trying, to having this stolen car. I got a call on my phone that was like unidentified number, and I let it go to voicemail. And when I checked the voicemail, I was like, "This is Sergeant so-and-so, Baltimore Police Department. Seems there's a misunderstanding about whether you're allowed to use his car, and it's like, well, at this point, I'm crossing the Manhattan Bridge, like, so quick. But then, this is addicts, you know, right? It's like, we always think we have this great plan to make things better, like, we always know how to make things better ourselves, right? So it's like, so I had a stolen car. I was like, I'm gonna, I had a lot of plans for how I was going to make money to eventually get this car back to him. Like, I really thought I was going to be able to return the car. No, I left it somewhere where it wound up, you know how we are. Like, I left it somewhere and I wound up being gone for days or whatever. When I came back for it, it was gone. It had been towed. So here it is in the snow. The car I was living in was towed. You know what I mean? Like, everything about it was this total shit show. And I found an old buddy of mine that, you know, I was like, can I stay with you, right? And after a couple days, he was like, you can't stay here anymore. It's like the story of my life at that point. And it was so cold, I'm not kidding. It was like, I didn't want to be homeless right then. It was February, you know how that is. And, you know, but my sister, she was calling everyone that we ever knew. And she finally tracked me down at his place, and I had not, well, also at that point, someone had stolen my phone, too. So that was actually one of those miracles that helped me work the steps. You know, later on, I saw that. But someone had stolen my phone, so all my contacts were gone, which, of course, you know, as addicts, we're not going to, like, write them down in a separate place, you know, make sure we don't lose them. So, yeah, so she calls me, and she's like, you know, come home, and mom and dad, you know, they want you to come home. And I was like, oh, you know, all right. Like, I hadn't planned on getting clean. That was not my plan for that day. I didn't have a plan for that day. And so I was like, well, all right, you know. And so I hung up, and I shot up, and then I called my mom from my friend's phone, and she started sobbing. And and I was like, if you wire me $100 and buy me a bus ticket, I'll come back. And I was like, I'm going to ration out this bundle, right, so that I can detox slowly. No, I did all in the bus. So, I felt like shit. But the point of all this, I mean, later, but the point of all, and, man, do not stuff in a bus bathroom. That's not easy. So, but I managed. But, you know, that was the beginning of that was the beginning of the process. You know, it's like I have a court date coming up, I have a warrant out for my arrest, the drugs were not working anymore. I just felt, you know, that's it. That was all I had. That had been all I had at that point. That was my only thing that I had in my life. I traded everything else away in order to do that drug. And then that wasn't even working. So I think that was really the point where I pretty much gave up. And that's when I was willing to, just for some reason, thought just popped in my head, oh, I don't know, meetings start around now. It was like 7. I was like, I guess I'll go to a meeting. I mean, I don't even know why that thought came in my head. But, you know, that was one of the miracles of recovery. So I went to that meeting, which, you know, it turns out it's still my home group to that day. And from the very first, I didn't share for 3 weeks in a row. And then I opened my mouth like the last minute of the meeting when they were about to close, and, you know, and then all of a sudden all the heads turned to me, and I was like, no, it's all right, because I realized they were about to pass the basket and everything, and they were like, no, go ahead and share. I rambled for so long, and some people are probably thinking that now. They're like, Jesus Christ, man. Let's get Glenn back up here at the podium. So then that was one of the very first lessons I learned in recovery is after a couple times sharing, the woman who wound up becoming my sponsor, she would, I don't even know if she wore a watch, but she would like point at her wrist. And when she did that, I was like, thanks for letting me share. I cut myself off mid-sentence because that's what she told me to do. You know, so I don't know. I guess the point is I feel like I don't see the willingness sometimes from people. And by sometimes, I mean a lot of the time. And, you know, I just keep coming back because, like I said, it works for me. And if it can work for one other person, then that's good enough, you know. And the other people, you know, I just think to myself, maybe they'll keep coming back. And if they don't make it back, that's addicts, you know. It's just what addicts do. It's just what it is. So it is a miracle, you know, that I'm clean today. I would have never, ever thought that. And one of the things I was sharing recently, some people is that, you don't have to clap for this. I have 10 years clean. I feel like the first 10 hours are the hardest, you know. At a certain point, it's like, you know, thanks. But so it's like, you know, I have 10 years, and I, you know, some stuff in my life, like a lot of it, I'm not really happy about. But it's like I used to run to drugs for even the smallest feeling, and now I don't have to do that anymore. And sometimes that's just as simple as it is. But I am still, in a general way, happy, though. I can count the number of things I'm, like, not particularly happy with, but in a general way, like, I'm okay, I'm content. I never used to have that before. And I'll share this. The first time I came to Ocean City, I was a newcomer. I got a ride from another newcomer. She got really weird and crazy, and she left me here. Yeah, left me here. And it was hard for me to open up to people, especially back then. So I was so upset. I hid under a table, fortunately for table skirts, and I called my mom and dad, and they were like, "We'll come get you." And that's one of the things that helped me later with the ninth step is I realized, you know, they're the people that they are. And I can't wish for them to have been different back when I was a child, but they really tried to step up. And we've all worked together as a family, you know, and I've been able to make those amends and feel absolutely no resentment in my heart for them. And that was one of those pivotal moments. They drove, you know, three and a half hours to come get me from Ocean City. And, you know, now, here, years later, it's like I needed some chapstick. And it was 10:20, and I knew I was speaking at 11, and that I should be there early. And I was like, I'm going to walk just across the street and get the chapstick and come back, right? Every maybe 15 feet, I kept seeing people that I knew. And I stopped, and I stopped, and I stopped, and I stopped. And finally, I get not even out of the parking lot, and I see four more people I know. And then I was like, I'm just going across to get some chapstick. And they're like, what time are you speaking? And I was like, 11. And they're like, well, it's 10:41. Like, took me 20 minutes to not even make it out of the parking lot. Fortunately, they had chapstick. And nowadays, I'm not afraid to ask for help, and I took the chapstick. So, yeah. Recovery. Thanks for letting me share.